So tonight we're continuing the series in the five hindrances. And I have a little calendar that somebody sent me in the mail that has little sayings that she puts on there. And Tuesday, May 15th, I had this on there by someone who I can't read. It says, in order to move forward and take the next step, you have to acknowledge the current reality. So fair enough. I feel like that's what we're doing here, is acknowledging the current reality that we're in. But we have to really acknowledge it, not just nod our head and say when the hindrances are spoken. I already know that. I know that. I've heard it many times. I know that. There's nothing that's more damaging to one's practice and full embodiment of spirit than to already know something. You can't get in. There's no way to get in. And you also feel that there's a kind of way that that person is frozen in perspective to their problem and have just let a little light in. It's like cracking the door. And even after as many years as I've been practicing, I never say that I understand something because it shuts me out, closes me off. And certainly not when we're talking about the level of reality in which most of us are fixed. And to discuss and to explore the hindrances is to explore where and how it is that we're fixed on this world, within this world. In our disposition, in our particular posturing to life, because if you look at what the hindrances are, they are convincing states of mind that have us totally enslaved and at service to their disposition. We believe that they're a legitimate response to the conditions that are arising around us. So if I'm angry or fearful or desiring, that's the legitimate normal thing that anyone would do given the circumstances of my life. And on we go, battling the external conditions because we give the internal states legitimacy. That's the nature of our reality. That's the nature of it. That's the very reality we're trying to turn. We're trying to turn around. How do we do that? We first have to acknowledge, as this saying says, we have to acknowledge the reality we're in. We have to acknowledge that we do that, that we are stuck there, that we lay claim to our desires and feel that they're really convincingly true, and that our fears and our restlessness and that our dullness of mind and on, our doubting is a true statement of the of our life. And if you'd lived my life, you'd have this too. That sort of rationale. But it isn't the state of our life. If that were the state of life, then why come here? Go to church. It will give you, I don't know what it'll do. It's been too long since I've gone. But it'll do something. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to change the nature of how we perceive and what reality is. And to do that, we have to see what it is that motivates our reactivity, our disposition, our view, our assumptions about the reality we're in. And there's nothing better to look at than the hindrances that drive our life, because most of us are enslaved to those states of mind. So if we want an evolution of consciousness, which I hope you're feeling the call to move into that evolutionary path, or things will just remain the same for the next millennium after millennium after millennium. And we really need to, sort of a cold splash of water on us to wake us up to this ridiculous way that we treat each other, we treat the environment, we treat everything. And why do we do that? Is because we're basing ourselves within the wrong truth. So when we look at these hindrances, please take them as seriously as they're intended. Use the homework to see if we can't scratch beneath the surface of our assumptions. Never claiming, oh, I know about sleepiness. I know about dullness of mind. When's the next one coming up? I really want to get to... Because each one has immeasurable depth. And we can see our lives unfolding within each of these hindrances as they are communicated. Hindrance, the Pali word for hindrance is niwarana. Niwaranas. They're niwaranas. They mean coverings. That's the word, the Pali word. Means covering. Covering what? Covering of the heart. Covering of the heart. So, hindrances when unobserved, when unattended, when reacted to, when assumed to be the legitimate force and disposition of life itself, when given legitimacy, they then cover our heart. We should feel outraged by that. I'm not going to have my heart covered. I mean, there's a certain way that I do need you to feel outraged within yourself. A strength of commitment, which is the lifeless mind, which is what I'm talking about tonight, is the lifeless mind. The third hindrance, the lifeless mind. Sometimes called sloth and torpor, sometimes called dullness, boredom, lack of interest, on and on. But basically it's that quality of waning energy when we're not being fed according to our prescribed needs. I was having that today, and I said, okay, well, what a great opportunity. I'm giving a talk tonight on it. You know, I'm not going to try to shake myself out of it. And it's absolutely amazing what it does, how convincing it is. The mood, it establishes, the energy establishes a mood. And then the mood has a certain way of sort of self-deprecating intentions. So this is I'm giving you my psyche, so yours will be different. But it'll have something like, oh, you know, I have to get out of this, or nobody will want to listen to what I have to say because it's kind of a deadening quality to it. And so how can I so that immediately it's not incorporated, or it's no longer alive, you see. It represents that which is dead. It represents the worst side of us, because all of us want to be vital, don't we? We're all about vitality and youth, especially in this culture. So nobody wants to be entrapped within a waning condition of energy. I mean, that's what, you know, people, old people do. No one should take offense to that, because I'm speaking personally here. I like the fact that I can talk about the elderly and include myself within it these days. So what does reality look like within this hindrance? I want to see it. Instead of trying to provide a countermeasure, what does it do? And it starts solidifying a disposition, a mood around it, and a kind of way that I perceive or project others would perceive me if I maintain this particular quality of energy. And how I look at myself, and what kind of a teacher I am if I'm, you know, of that ilk. And then there's a whole story, you know. You can just feel it go on, waves of it, go move out. I found it all very fascinating, actually, because I was taking none of it seriously. And as soon as I didn't take it, as soon as I really paid attention, it dissipated. Because it needs your inattention in order to sustain its life. That's the problem with these things, is that when you're really serious about it, you don't have it anymore. But you have to be really serious about it. And because so much of having this lifeless energy is half-heartedness, isn't it? Lifeless energy really means I'm half-hearted, and because that's its manifestation, that's its characterization. See, each of these hindrances has a characterization, has a manifestation. We just claim reference. Oh, I am. The I is extra. It's the desire that's desiring. It's the fear that's fearing. It's the sloth and torpor that's waning its energy. But it has a character associated with it, perhaps formed and chiseled through our cultural indoctrination. But so you can really get a sense of what it means to, you know, to have waning energy. I'll save you some of the storylines that went with that, but once we get, okay, what is this? When you seriously ask, not from a corrective point of view, we're not trying to correct it. Again, you see, if you're trying to correct it, you've already assumed its legitimacy. I never assume its legitimacy. Nothing ever has any legitimacy in my mind. Isn't that amazing? It should be exactly the same for you. Nothing has any legitimacy. How can it possibly have legitimacy? But it's almost like we're being possessed, and I say that very gently. I don't mean it in any kind of ghost sense. But this body is being filled with an energy that has a character. And that character then is crippling that awareness, because the awareness folds within that character and then starts making statements about me within that energy. The me is nowhere to be found within that energy. It's the energy that's speaking. And so to turn our attention back into itself and to see, okay, let's see this lifeless energy. See where it takes you? It's like a stone. It starts taking you into areas that no one wants to go. Dullness. Whoa. Boring. You're boring. Name calling, doesn't it, right? So if you give it legitimacy, you're not going to go there, because that's giving, when you give it legitimacy, then you're giving yourself legitimacy. Those things go hand in hand. Then you're someone who is boring, and you're also someone who is fighting boredom, and you have a whole mixture of struggle going on there that doesn't need to be there at all if we understand it in the right orientation. So sleepiness is interesting. I'm going to go back to the beginning. I kind of went ahead of myself here a little bit, but let me go, because we speak a lot about it on retreat. Why do we speak a lot about it on retreat? Because it's so obvious on retreat that people live with it. Okay, so I want to just talk about it as I would speak about it on retreat, because I think these particular points are important for everyone to know. And one of them is, of course, that do you get enough sleep? Do you get sufficient sleep? One of the reasons we're sleepy is we don't get enough sleep. One of the reasons we're dull and we are lethargic is because we aren't nourished sufficiently. So I say in my beginning class, get 8 hours of sleep or don't come. I put those conditions upon coming back to the class. I would gently like to offer you the same conditions. Get enough sleep. Or what are you doing? What are you doing? I mean, if you don't get enough sleep, don't pretend like that you have any self-care, that there's any kindness there in your heart for yourself. We're deeply disturbed if we don't. And you have to look at that deep disturbance, because meditation is on the other side of that. That's the preliminary practice. Before we can even start meditating, we have to have sufficient sleep. And if you're not getting sufficient sleep, there's some disturbance there that keeps you workaholic or, I don't know, that needs to be addressed. So address that. Address that. And then the other one is that when we pair relaxation, which is what meditation in its foundation is, relaxed basic physical and mental relaxation, we have learned through conditioning, this is the mechanics of it I'm speaking about, we've learned to go to sleep within that conditioned response of relaxation when the lights are low and there isn't a lot going on. And so many of us have to retrain that quality of relaxation with alert attention. And that takes some time to do because, but it can be done over time as you start pairing a clarity with relaxation. Then when you get relaxed, clarity comes out of it rather than a kind of a dullness. And that's just retraining. That's retraining. And all of us can do that. You have to be willing to go through many, 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 many more moments of sleepiness. But you come out the other side of that pretty rigorously. Now, the other thing that I think dullness shows is that we have ratcheted up our conditioned reference for what it means to be alive. Most of us are conditioned to be alive within stimulation, with excitement, with intensity. And unless there is a certain threshold of intensity, our spirits are drained out of us. And that it's not until the noise level is a certain higher, the pitch or the excitement or something reaches a certain crescendo, that we then move into that with our own aliveness. And it props us up. The drumbeat of life props us up sufficiently so that we can stand steady enough to keep our attention. And I see that kind of getting worse. I see part of that is the play of self-importance. That's part of the excitement of being alive these days, is all of the recorders we have strapped on our belt and all of the ways that we think are ourselves to be so important, with pagers and beepers and Blackberries and cell phones and all of that. You know, if somebody needs me, you're sort of this on top of things, and I've got to stay in contact. And this kind of, it's crazy making. Where's the simplicity in that? You see, what I always wanted to know was, what was life if it wasn't ever, what was life in its bare quality, in the forest, taking a walk, without anything, with nothing, without any radio going on, without any slight shock to my nervous system? Some of us are afraid to find out that, and so we keep a kind of level of drama with us. That drama acts as the stimulation that keeps us feeling like we're alive and engaged and working and struggling with life, because life, isn't it a struggle? No, it need not be. But in order to do that, we have to walk in bare living condition. Nothing supports us within simplicity. And yet everything comes out. Everything is, we're completely affected. And there isn't a threshold to be affected because there's no covering to the heart. When we have to reach a threshold, it means that we are being driven by the hindrances. That threshold is met, and then finally we get our aliveness up to what we, which isn't aliveness at all. It's conditioned excitement. Excitement is mentally derived. Joy is heart driven. We're trying to find and reach for joy. Not excitement. Excitement, if you feel it, it's not that pleasant. Just feel it sometime. I mean, just take a moment instead of just playing it out on the stage. Feel what it feels like to be excited. It's like, ugh. Very quickly, it's flat. Not something that we would necessarily seek. So that dependency on stimulation for our aliveness really needs to be, these things need to be looked at in our life. And my assumption is that we're doing that here, that we're not just coming and sitting in a pew, you know, and then leaving after a couple of hours, and that's our training for the week. But we're really looking at these things. We're turning ourselves back around to the bare living experience and addressing the illegitimacy of what we have, how we have lived, the illegitimate way we all of us have lived. But we can't do that unless we embrace the reality we're in and not, you know, just look at it. We just look at it. So very quickly, when the mind is lifeless, the first thing you notice is that there's no joy. Because lifelessness is covering and keeping us from presence, from being present too. They seem paradoxical, counterindicated. How can you be lifeless and show up? Doesn't one negate the other? No, not at all. Nothing, listen please, nothing negates awareness. Nothing. Nothing stops it. Nothing can possibly stop it, except you. You can stop it. But just to be, awareness doesn't stop just because there's a lull in energy. Not at all. We stop it because we've assumed the story of that lull and say, oh, I can't, you know, this is too, it's too, it's, I can't. And then the burden of what we have to do feels insurmountable and we give in to the dullness that's there. And of course, dullness represents the lack of interest. Well, Dharma requires interest. And so again, it seems like this is, these are counterintuitive, they're counterindicated. One negates the other, but it's not so. Because we can be interested in the loss of interest. If you understand, if we understand that our lives depend on it, if we understand that, and that whatever the mind is creating for us to believe is our disposition in the moment, and if we see and believe that that's illegitimate, that's just giving reference illegitimately, then we're going to say, and that is then seeping my life out of me. Seeping, it's like a hole in a tire. And we say, oh, but can this be seen? Can this dullness that I'm feeling, can it be seen? Yes, and you have to feel the dullness. Of course you have to feel the dullness. What does dullness feel? It feels dull. But that doesn't mean anything. So what if it feels dull? It has no story associated with it. It's a feeling of dullness. And then when we stop, because we're no longer moving illegitimately from the energy, we're moving legitimately back towards it to rediscover it. We've assumed we've known what it is. That's why we've run from it. But now we no longer make that assumption that we know anything about it at all. We know nothing about it. It's the man with the mask. What's behind the mask there? Let's take the mask off and look at this thing. Suddenly the dullness gets very interesting. It's not interesting as long as we're running with the energy, the legitimate display of energy as the correct way that reality is coming at us. And of course I'm tired, I've had 4 nights of this and 2 of that, and I've worked very hard and I haven't slept and all of that. Our story will always give legitimacy to the mind's reactions. And we're reowning this. You see what is required? We're being fully empowered instead of being puppeteers. And most of us feel like we've been self-reliant and sufficient and independent, and we've been on top of the world, and all we've been doing is being driven by our hindrances. Desire, wanting, fearing, please, yes, no, oh, please, oh, yes, hi, yes, oh, great, no. Okay. And at the end of one's life, you can plot out the hindrances from what we've done and how we were. But now, this is the lion's roar of true empowerment. We have to face this thing, what we've been running from this whole time. And dullness, I mean, it's a little bit easier with aversion and desire because they are energy arousing hindrances. You already got the energy up, you know, when you're fearful, it's like, or desiring, it's like, yes, give me more. So you can reallocate that energy very nicely into interest, because it goes that way with relatively easy, actually. But in dullness, the very thing I need to be interested doesn't seem to be there. So it's one of the hardest hindrances, and it has a whole social connotation that is very transfixing. Like, oh, you're boring, or you're ordinary, or you're uninteresting. See, that's the state of affairs when we are lost within that energy. And the last thing we want others to think of us is that we don't have anything worth saying, that we're not worth even being acknowledged. And so this energy carries that anxiety with it, that it may be really who I am, because if you look at it, dullness will activate another hindrance, and together they're like, whoa. And that's doubt. It feeds doubt, because the law of energy and the fear of being, not being worth noticing, which is one of the storylines that can come out of that waning energy. We fear that so much of that we could be that the doubt comes in. Oh, maybe I am that. And then dullness, you can feel it, can move right into depression. Unabated dullness, when coupled with that doubting and that movement towards inadequacy, is a clear path towards depression. And the problem with depression is it keeps spinning the well deeper down in terms of waning energy. And we keep following the patterns down instead of taking a stand. Okay, I'm going to go exercise. I don't feel like exercising. I'm going to exercise anyway. I don't care. I'm just going to start moving the energy in a different direction. I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it, but I'm going to do it. See, that's the kind of commitment it takes to get out of these states when we have fostered and festered within them for so long, around a whole storyline and abiding, because they become comfortable components of ourselves. And yes, it's awful, isn't it? As we go home, we close the blinds, we put on sad music and are miserable, and then we go to the therapist the next day to see if we can resolve our depression. It takes more from that. No one can do that. No one can take us out of that spiral except our own determination, our own. And interest is the way out, because interest really does create. But you aren't going to be interested in if you believe the story. If you believe the illegitimacy of the mind, what we're going to try to flee it. We're not going to be interested in it. Interest requires a different orientation to the problem. The problem itself, if it's followed as a problem, never leads to interest. It leads to trying to problem solve, which is to get out of the problem. To be interested, we have to turn towards the problem. You're interested in the problem, not trying to resolve it. You see, that an interest can only come from a reorientation of what the problem is. That's Dharma. That's what Dharma is. That's the beauty of it, you see. That's the enlivening of it. And all of you probably have felt that from time to time, where you just, you feel it, and you feel the Dharma in you. You feel it, you know, and it's like you could take on anything in a moment, and you feel the empowerment of it, and you feel the appreciation for having been, for abiding in it. And there's just nothing stopping you at that point, because you're in the correct alignment to your own energy, to your own understanding. And you've seen how it resolves problems and how problems disappear, really. They don't resolve, they just disappear. More magical than empowered. And then there are times when we're in the wrong orientation, in which the Dharma seems remote and distant. And that's why we have to keep hearing it over and over again, because we've had so much conditioning to grant the illegitimacy of the mind its way. And then there is the way that dullness can be a defense mechanism in itself. And this happens on retreat. It happens often when there is something that might be arising in our psyche that we don't want to see. One beautiful way the mind has learned to make the picture fuzzy. It just takes the radio and puts it halfway between stations. And then, you know, you can kind of hear it, but not really. And you sort of, you know, but there's all the white noise. That's what dullness does. Is it just takes that and just puts it a little bit out of sync, so that there's just being obscured. And therefore, it doesn't have to be felt. It doesn't have to be really looked. It doesn't have to be, the emotion doesn't have to be embraced. And it's very, very good at doing that. Very good at doing that. Nothing like sleepiness. Nothing like dullness of mind or boredom. Because what does boredom say? You see, boredom says, nothing here worth paying attention to. It's an assumption. Boredom carries an assumption with it. This is boring. That's a conclusion reached about the moment. We're not interested in here and now. And when the feeling of boredom comes in, listen to this. When the feeling of boredom comes into the moment no longer is worth paying attention to. Because the boredom is saying, there's nothing here worth paying attention to. And therefore, when we believe it, so we don't pay attention. So we say, well, I have to wait until this goes. He said that all things change, so I'll just wait until this changes, and then I won't be bored anymore, then I'll pay attention. And so our awareness becomes conditional on whether we're bored or not. Well, what do you think the mind's going to do as we progress? It's going to bring more and more boring moments to you, because it wants you to perceive itself less and less. Whatever we run from, that's what it's going to become back and be reinforced. So dullness or boredom or lethargy or whatever our hindrance, our main one may be, that is going to become, until we move into the proper orientation to it, it's going to become our personal illness. And I have seen countless people go through many, many retreats unwilling to take the proper orientation to their hindrance. And I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I'm trying to invigorate us, to encourage us towards courage, hardage, so that we'll uncover this thing. Because it doesn't go away. It'll go away in time, but it comes back more frequently through the strategies of avoidance that we apply to it. Until we're settled with this thing, until we're up against the wall and we have nowhere to go, we go, okay, that's it, this is it then. Then we can start making headway. But most of us push it back till we can kind of live with it a little more, and then we flee from it again, because now we can live a little more easily with it. We don't take it until the darn thing is on a cliff. And we say, okay, boredom. Off it goes. Because that's what all it requires. I sprained my neck. There's a great story. I could go on tonight because I could just go on. I feel storytelling-ish. But anyway, there's a great story in the Buddha's time about a dullard. You know, everybody thought he was a dullard, and he thought he was a dullard, and everybody acknowledged him. He's too dumb to practice. He's too dumb. He's dull. I don't know if he's dumb or just dull, but he was. So the Buddha didn't throw him away. He brought him forward, and he said, he gave him a white cloth. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this white cloth, and I just want you to rub your fingers over this white cloth and notice what happens to the white cloth as you just rub it. And so the dullard said, well, I can do that. So just in the course of time, he noticed that the cloth became stained. And that was exactly the right practice for him to understand the changing nature of things and for him to awaken. So what does that have to do with anything? I don't know. But the dullness is not an indication that we can't awaken. It's not an inhibitor. No one doesn't have the intelligence. Everyone has sufficient intelligence. Everyone has sufficient aliveness. No matter how your life is configured, you may have more of one hindrance or another, but behind it is the same quality of mind and heart that awakened the Buddha. Let us be confident in that. Don't doubt it. You don't need to doubt that. Doubt whether you want to do it or not. That's a true doubt. I don't know whether I want to do it. Maybe you don't. Well, look at that one. Look there. See if you want to do it. See if you want to put the energy. But don't doubt that you have the capacity to do it, that you have the potential to do it. Everyone has. Equally, regardless of how mentally astute or disease-ridden, I have chronic fatigue, I can't, you know, I have this, or I have this problem, I have that problem. Okay, we make the practice work for you. I'll give you a cloth to rub. Doesn't matter. We'll find a path. We'll find a way for everyone to be able to do this if they are sincere. People come and say, oh, I can't sit because I have a bad back. I said, lie down. Well, I'll go to sleep. If you go to sleep, that's up to you. Stay awake and lie down. That's the instruction. See, this waiting for us to get over something or for things to change or conditions to move, when what's holding the conditions isn't moving at all. There are the conditions. It's like the sky. What holds the weather patterns doesn't move. The sky doesn't move. The weather moves within the sky, but the sky doesn't move. Awareness does not move. Your conditions, lull, excitement, sleepiness, desire, that's the weather patterns that move through. But that which holds the weather, that which holds it all, does not move. All we need to do is to connect to that. Energetically. And question the other. Not question, You see, we question the wrong thing. That's the whole turning of the Dharma, is around that one thing, that one. What are we questioning here? Are we questioning the wrong thing? I can't do it. That's questioning the wrong thing. I'm too sleepy. That's the wrong thing. I'm too restless. I'm too bored. I'm too desiring. I'm too fearful. I'm too. That's all the wrong thing. Next. What is this restlessness? Right thing. Good. Perfect question. Perfect. Sometimes you have to wait a long time for somebody just to come up to the right orientation to themselves. Because we have such incredible histories of self-abuse. And it's just coming up with that one question that's in the right orientation. Go with it. That's it. That's where your aliveness is. You can feel it when a person finds their alive question. What is love? Where is contentment? Who am I? What is this? Suddenly, their expressions change, the whole thing bubbles up. Why? Because suddenly they have imbibed in the awareness, they're no longer obscured, and their heart is no longer obscured in the hindrance. The question awakened them. What is your question? And are you willing to ask it? It will change your life, I promise you that. It will change you so that you will not have a covered heart. I promise you that. Because the question itself is the uncovering of the heart. And many of us don't want our heart uncovered. We feel threatened by that, insecure having a heart that's uncovered. Then you will not have an uncovered heart. It's your choice. There's nothing anyone can do about that decision. But why not give it a chance? Why not give it a chance? And see if it's as bad as... Okay, so that we mean, okay, I'm bored. Okay, I can do one of two things. Act it out. Sob. Wait until tomorrow. Or I can just... What is this? Now I have to be very quiet with it, don't I? I can't play out my life's song any longer. I am without a song now. But I'm also interested. I give up my song and my dance and my woes and my sorrow for interest and joy. I don't know why. It's like, I'm not going to... No, I don't. What do you have? You have joy and interest. I have my woes and sorrows. No. I don't know. I have to take a few years and decide whether that's a fair deal. I said, what is? Okay. Let's see. Let's see. May we all know joy. Can we sit for a minute or two? So, okay, if there are any questions or comments about anything, I'd be happy to... Yes.
Some of this I may find out from practicing the homework this week, but I'm curious about when that state of dullness and lethargy comes up. And instead of reacting against it or going with it, you decide to examine it with interest and see it and feel it. And you've done that, let's say, for a while. How do you know whether it's naturally dissipating of its own weight of being examined and then going on to something else and it hasn't been so bad, or you're using an avoidance technique to go get a cup of coffee or a brownie or go watch TV or something that your mind tells you it's all done, but you're actually reacting against it?
It's a good question. And the question, just for the tape, is that when you have a moment of dullness or and you're willing to turn your attention towards it and actually observe it with interest, how do you know that in the course, because it does change, and it, just in the course of time it's changing and dissipating, or there's a slight avoidance that goes on when you're finding yourself going to get a cup of coffee and saying, oh, it's over now, it's finished sufficiently, I can move on to the next thing. Okay? So you have to be real careful. First of all, you know. I just want to say that you know. You know whether you're avoiding or not. You know whether you're applying a strategy of waiting to get over something. If you're thinking this is going to change, you're applying a strategy of avoidance. You see, you hear that? That's a spiritual fix that many people get into. It's like the record has a little mark on it. These are the old days when they had record. But they would get in and it would keep playing the same tune over and over again, and just a scratch or whatever it is. If the spiritual fix of that is that you have become aware of the universal quality of impermanence in life, and then you start applying that philosophy to your practice as a philosophy, so that you say, oh, this too will pass. You see, you're not really being with it. You're waiting it out. And that I've seen many people caught in that little skip in the record for a long period of time. This is not mentally driven. This is heart driven. When you want to know something, you're hungry for it. You're not in a waiting pattern. A waiting pattern is a partial heart. What we're really saying is I want to put forth the least amount of energy to get the greatest product, right? So I'll apply anicca, and hopefully it'll change, and then I'll move on. What I really want is a cup of coffee without the boredom. Okay? So that's a partial heart. So I'm not going to put any strategy. I don't know if it's going to last the rest of my life. If it lasts the rest of my life, at this point I don't even care because I'm interested in it. As long as I'm interested in it, it's like a first love, right? We're not interested in how long the relationship's going to last when you first meet. You're interested in the nature of the contact and the quality of the contact. The quality of contact is the first love. What is going on here? Doesn't this feel terrible? What is going on here? With the quality of that first romance, it's like you want to know the pockmarks of the other person. You want to know it, you know, not your story within it, but their story free of you. You want to get to know them for their own sake, for them, because you care about it, right? See, that's the uncovering of the heart. You can feel it in the words I'm using and in the relationship I'm intoning. Uncovering the heart. Now the hindrance is no longer a hindrance, is it? Because the heart is uncovered. Doesn't mean that at some point you're going to get, God, this is enough. Okay. Backing away skillfully and saying, okay, enough fear or enough avoid or enough anger or enough, I've seen, you know, I need a breather here. That's fine. But you know you're doing that, right? And you're not pretending to wait it out or do anything. You go in and that particular kind of careful observation usually there's only a certain amount of time we can bring that kind of close attention to. Before we go, you got to back away a little bit, and that's fine. But know if you're applying strategies or not to what it is that you're seeing. And then, if you are, realize there's another hindrance playing forth in that moment. There's avoidance of boredom. So what we had at first was a neutral object. And the mind became bored from the neutrality feeling tone of that object. Right? There's nothing going on here that's very exciting. So remember that feelings can be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So in this case, it's neutral. And then boredom arises. But boredom is no longer neutral. Boredom is aversive. We don't like boredom. We would rather be bored than be neutral. So boredom is actually a step up for us, because now we're in struggle. And now we're in struggle, we can complain and we can do all kinds of things. We can bring a whole drama to bear upon something that had no drama at all, which was much worse to us than that moment in which we became bored and then hated the boredom, you see? Be willing to stay with the neutral and examine that and to see the aversion in the boredom. Oh, I got that. Because every time you see something, that which is, there's nothing behind it. Right? If you're not seeing from a hindrance, eventually you'll be just clear seeing, and there's no tone behind clear seeing. It's just interest. That's how clear seeing manifests, as interest and love and affection. Yes.
Talked a lot about this in terms of boredom and not sleepiness.
Right. 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 Yeah. Right. The difference, the question is having to do with when there is legitimate need for sleep and when there is avoidance or defense mechanism, that sleepiness is a defense against what might be coming up in the mind. How do you know the difference between it? Well, you won't necessarily know it in terms of the state, because the state will probably feel very much like it does. Yes, yeah. So, first of all, you can kind of do a reflection and see whether you got enough sleep that night. The other thing that happens is that if this is occurring, like when you're sitting in meditation, very quickly when you get up, if it's not physical fatigue, it'll dissipate. Because you'll change and you'll become distracted in other things, and your defense of sleepiness is no longer needed because you're not looking in that way anymore, and the sleepiness will dissipate. If it dissipates that quickly, you probably know that something else is going on there besides your need for physical sleep. Okay? So what you do when you're sleepy is just get a sense, just be very gentle in this, because we're not trying to ram or jam our way into uncovering, throwing defenses off recklessly. See if there's an emotion associated there, perhaps below the sleepiness. Just see if there's an emotional tone in the body. Sometimes it can be felt in the heart area. And just be very gentle and very subtle to see whether there's an emotional tone that's behind the sleepiness and what that emotional tone might do. Sometimes when you connect with emotional tone, a story will come out of that, and you'll get a sense of what that particular thing is. But if the story doesn't come, just say, you know, just say, take the intention towards it. Say, I want to understand this. In my own time, I really have a strong need to understand this. Just take that intention. My intention is to understand this. Okay? That sets the mind going in a way that is far more impactful than your struggle to try to uncover it. If you genuinely mean it, you have to genuinely, I really want to understand this. I don't want there to be layers and layers of myself that are in which I'm blind to. I want to know what's going on. I don't care. It's only there. To me, every fact reveals greater harmony, not greater tragedy. So let me look at these facts, and they may be, all facts are resisted by self, by me. So I'm afraid. So okay, I'm willing to go through my fear and to look at this thing very gently. So bring a tone of softness within that intentionality. Again, it's not ramming ourselves through, but encouraging ourselves out. It's like bringing E.T. out of the cave. Okay? E.T. stuck in the cave? This just came to my mind. So they used M&Ms. Right? Come on out. Come on. Come on. So it's just be gentle. Just be gentle. Just put an M&M out there. Come on. Come on. I'm patient with you. I'll be patient with you. And then you'll start feeling it. It'll start coming out with your intentionality. It will. Okay? Yeah. But don't... Sometimes people are so critical that they're not being defensive at all. They're actually being tired, or there's a lull of energy, which if you eat a meal afterwards, there's a lull of energy. You might have gotten 10 hours of sleep. You're still, after you eat lunch, you're going to still have this lull of energy. So don't, oh, I'm defensive. It's got to be defensive. What is, you know, don't get too, we love that, because we love to take ourselves on as a problem. Okay, so it'll start coming up again and again and again and again repetitively when you reach a certain depth of quiet. Sleepiness will be there. And that's a pretty good indication that that there's some defense that's going on. Yes. Yes. Did you doze off on me there? So the question is about asking a question that has some interest to you. You see, we hold ourselves in such disregard that we bypass our interest. We all have natural interest. We have natural interest. It's where life touches us most intimately, is where we're most interested. It's so interesting to me that we, that's just giving myself over to pleasure or something. I don't know what it is. But you can take those areas and start exploring and natural questions. Say you're a therapist. Well, what is it that got us into therapy? Let's say that what got you into therapy is the interest in intimacy and seeing oneself and meeting clearly. Okay? So now you're in therapy and you're being a therapist with somebody and you're not meeting them because a therapist can't meet anybody. Right? So you think, well, that's not intimacy. So now all of a sudden you're with somebody and you're listening to them and you're not filtering everything they say through your therapeutic language. You're willing to just move in and release the configuration and of what the mind is saying in terms of what problem they have, and you're really moving in to abiding in listening. You see? And so you can move through the obscuration by following your interest and just keep being compelled by what interests you like that. Sometimes it forms around a question, like the questions will change dependent upon our particular disposition, but a question, some of the questions I've had, like, where's their contentment? I mean, sometimes I really yearn for contentment, and I'm all busy, and I say, wait a minute, I know this is not the state of affairs. I know this is the state of my mind, not the state of my heart. I want to rejoin. Where is their contentment in this moment? Do you feel the intentionality goes right through like a hot knife through butter? Shoo! Because the intentionality is there. Where is their contentment? And you move to what holds the discontentment. Remember, you move to the sky, not the clouds of discontentedness or freneticism or anxiety or nervousness or whatever it might be that's filling that mind so that we don't know contentment. You move to the sky that holds it. The sky is never in disarray. Lightning, thrash, nothing. And you get so that you feel compelled by that understanding. And it becomes intolerable for you to pretend like you're lightning, clouds, thunder, and because you know that you're not. And that just comes over time, going back and forth with this thing, seeing what holds it over time, and then suddenly the whole thing just breaks one day. And it's, you never can be reconfigured so that it's believable for very long. It's over. And that's called stream entry. That's called awakening. Doesn't mean that from time to time you don't go back and be a thunderstorm. Doesn't mean that. It means it never fools you. Never. Never convinces you again. Not from some philosophy. It has nothing to do with philosophy. Anicca, there's no Anicca in this. Okay, all, thank you. Next week we'll have a discussion on this topic, and I encourage some of you who haven't experienced discussions to come and explore perhaps moving yourself into a little bit of uncomfortableness with other people to explore what it's like to meet together and discuss these topics and take them deeper through that discussion.